Eh bien, bonjour à tous, bonsoir. Merci d'être venus avec nous pour assister à cette rencontre exceptionnelle avec Mack Brooks, qu'on a la grande chance d'avoir ici aux Utopiales. On a une heure ensemble pour poser des questions. Il y aura un petit temps pour vous poser des questions à la fin de cette conférence. On va balayer un petit peu, on va évidemment parler de zombies, on va évidemment parler notamment de cinéma fantastique, parce que Mack Brooks a une carte blanche ici aux Utopiales, donc il va peut-être pouvoir nous raconter pourquoi il a choisi les films, quels films il a choisi et quelles étaient les raisons. Mais je voudrais commencer peut-être par le début, par Mack Brooks enfant. Quels étaient les livres que vous lisiez et comment vous avez découvert les zombies et le cinéma fantastique?
Thank you. Let me first apologize for my lack of French. I'm not very good with languages. I'm still learning English, so I will do my best. Let me start by asking who has heard me. I've been here for 2 days. Who's heard me speak before? All right. I apologize if I repeat myself, because an answer is an answer. I'll try to be different. Well, let me start by saying that for me, reading as a child was very difficult. I'm the last person who should be paid as an author. I have what is called dyslexia. I don't know if you know what that is. That is a learning disability. It causes your brain to jumble words and to reverse letters. And so reading was very difficult. I would not have survived my schooling had my mother not taken my school books and brought it to the Institute for the Blind and had them read as audiobooks. So I listened to all my reading list. Otherwise, I would not be here. I would be sitting in an alleyway in Los Angeles with a heroin needle in my arm, probably. As far as reading, reading for pleasure was very difficult as a child. I will say that the first book I ever bought and read just for pleasure was called The Hunt for Red October by Tom Clancy. I don't know if you've heard of him. Yes, the guy in the red coat, he's with the funny hat, the member of the Tea Party. He's heard of it. Before Tom Clancy, spy novels, political novels, war novels, were written like Ian Fleming. You know him? He wrote James Bond. And they were all the same. They were all these very macho, what we call alpha males. And they would go around the world. And they had gadgets, a watch turned into a laser, and they would have sex with random women and never catch a venereal disease. And none of it was true. It was all fantasy. It was fantasy for middle-aged fat men to believe they could be supermen. But then Tom Clancy came along, and he was not in the military. He was not a spy. He was an insurance salesman from Maryland. But he loved the genre. He loved spies and military technology. And so he did real research. And so when he wrote Red October, it was not fantasy. It was based in reality. He researched actual Russian submarines and how the CIA really worked. And when I finished the book, I felt smarter than when I started. And I thought, if someone lets me become a writer for a living, that's the kind of writer I want to be, because I don't think there's anything half as interesting as can be made up as is in the real world. And so I tried to make homework and research the bulk of my writing, which is one of the reasons I love Jules Verne. How do you pronounce him in French? Jules Verne?
Jules Verne.
Jules Verne. Mon cher Jules Verne. He really thought about his science fiction at a time when there was not the technology. But he tried to make the logic make sense. He didn't just write about the Nautilus, the submarine. He tried to figure out how it would really work. And when he did From the Earth to the Moon, he tried to really figure out how you could get a man to the moon with the technology of the day. And I don't know if you know this, but the spot that he chose to launch the astronaut is exactly where the American space program is today, because he had already figured it out. And I thought, that is the kind of writer I would love to be someday.
À quel moment vous avez commencé à écrire? Parce qu'on connaît évidemment vos deux livres chez nous. À quel moment ça vous a titillé d'écrire des histoires?
The first time I wrote a story, I was about 12 years old, and I was on vacation with my parents in Venice. That's the one in Italy, not the one in California where I live. And I started writing a short story in the back of our little changing cabana, and I didn't stop for 3 days. And something happened. Something about my brain ignited, and time stopped. And don't get me wrong, the story was god-awful. The story was so bad, as was many of mine. But the process of writing, I think, kept me sane. I will say growing up with famous parents is a very isolated existence, because there's not many people like you. And everybody wants something from you, and you can't trust anyone. And it leads to a very solitary life. And so I could escape into my writing. And for 2 hours a night, every night, when I was a young man, a teenager, that's what I would do. And I did not ever think I would be good enough to get published. Indeed, when I wrote Zombie Survival Guide, I don't, you know this, I didn't try to get it published. I stuck it in a drawer because I thought, who's going to want this? I mean, it's a real book on how to fight something that isn't real. And it's all real, what I thought you would think was boring research. I talk about bottled water and dry socks so you don't get trench foot and all the real things you would need in a disaster scenario. There was no hero, no villain, no love story. Who's going to want to read that except me? And that's sort of how I approach all my writing. I always try to make sure I write something I would want to read, because that way, if you don't like it, at least it has one fan.
Vous nous avez parlé de Jules Verne, on a parlé de Tom Clancy. Et le fantastique dans tout ça? Est-ce qu'il y a des auteurs à un moment qui, pareil, vous ont plu particulièrement? Quand est-ce que vous le découvrez?
Oh, I mean, obviously, it's science fiction. I mean, H.G. Wells, duh. Isaac Asimov, duh. You know, I also liked, strangely enough, I like to read novelizations of science fiction movies, because I think if done right, you can go deeper. For example, Dawn of the Dead, the movie that we showed last night, there is a novel version by Susanna Sparrow, which is, I think, even better because it goes even deeper. And it really does talk about the social commentary of the time. So I love stuff like that. And I love 70s science fiction because it's so dark and so dismal, particularly written by the English, because they are, and I'm not making fun of your traditional enemies. I love them, actually. I almost married one of them. They're a dark people, or they used to be, especially in the 1970s.
Et les zombies, à quel moment ils apparaissent pour vous? Est-ce qu'il y a un ouvrage, un film qui a fait sens?
All right, now who heard me talk about this yesterday? All right, for those of you who haven't, I'm sorry to repeat myself, but I will talk about my introduction to zombies. I was a young man, I was about 12 or 13, and my body was going through biological changes. Okay, now you see, that this is where we meet our cultural differences. See, in France, these biological changes and sex, you all just put it out there. Okay, you just, you know, on the street. In America, it was all sort of looking around. And at the same time, we had a new rating for our movies in America called PG-13. PG-13 meant that women could just take their shirts off for no reason. And because in America, that was a big deal to us. We put that in everything. So you'll see a lot of American comedies of that time, like Stripes and Police Academy, where suddenly there was a shower scene for no reason. It had nothing to do with the plot. But when you're 13, that's a big deal. So I used to wait up. We had a new thing called cable television in America, and I used to wait up at night like I was a Viet Cong sniper waiting for an ambush, hoping to get my moment. And suddenly there was a movie where a woman was completely naked. And I thought, you know, Allah be praised. I was so excited. And she was in some village in New Guinea, and natives were dancing around, and I thought, to a teenage boy, I mean, this is it. This is... And then these creatures came out of the dark and started eating people. And what I didn't know was this was an Italian cannibal zombie movie. It's a real movie. They keep changing the titles. But really what they had done, and I'm 99% sure, 99, not 100, they took real documentary footage of cannibalism in New Guinea, of real flesh being eaten, and they cut it into the movie because they thought it would be fun and cute. When you are 12 or 13 years old and you see this, this leaves an impression on you. And so I was absolutely terrified of zombies from that point on. That was my introduction to zombies, that there were these creatures that would come for you and eat you alive. And a few years later, I saw another zombie movie called Night of the Living Dead by George Romero. And that was the big difference, because that movie actually gave me hope. Because in that movie, you could survive. Now, granted, the characters did not make good decisions, so they did not survive. But in the European one, you're doomed. You know, European horror films, you're dead. That's it. You're gone. It doesn't matter what decisions you make. You're going to die. Whereas in Romero's movies, it was all about making the good decisions. And I thought, what would those decisions be? And that was when I started thinking about it. And that all came together in Zombie Survival Guide.
Qu'est-ce qui vous intéresse dans la figure du zombie? Ça pourrait être un autre monstre, ça pourrait être des cannibales. Pourquoi spécifiquement le zombie?
I am fascinated. I don't like zombies. I don't like zombies any more than I like herpes. I don't like them. What I am interested in about zombies is that they don't obey the rules of other horror films. Because in every other, because there's a larger existential question about horror films. We are the dominant species on the planet. We have conquered this planet. This planet belongs to us. But that means that if a monster in a movie wants to kill us, we have to go find them. They have to cut us off from the herd and take out the stragglers. Because as a herd, we can beat anything. So that's why in most horror films, begins with someone young and dumb saying something like, "Wow, what was that? Let's go check it out." And then they die. When I watch those films, I just say, well, I wouldn't do that. Don't go check it out. You hear there's a giant shark in the water? Don't go in the water. But zombies come to us, and they don't care about the individuals. They care about the species. You know, see, one werewolf or one vampire or one Jason Voorhees or whatever, if he came into this room right now, we'd kick his ass. All right, we'd be okay. And they wouldn't come here. We're safe now. We're in the herd. Zombies don't care. They come for the herd. They are the existential threat. They are the natural disaster, the hurricane, the plague, and they don't care. And that's what's so terrifying about zombies, is that they come for the entire human race.
Qu'est-ce qui vous a donné envie d'écrire ce guide de survie contre les zombies?
Okay, I don't know what, if you have all heard of the Y2K scare. Some of you young people don't understand. See, in my country, there was a time called the 1990s, and it was a great time. The economy was booming, and it was peaceful, and the president did dirty things with an intern. Yes. But there was something called Y2K on the horizon, which meant that the computers were all going to reset and erase, and they would launch missiles, and the missiles would land on the farms, and it was fear. And I don't know how you dealt with this in Europe, but in America, we're survivalists. We all believe, yes, we can survive this. So there was a lot of people preparing for that. And I don't mean the crazy ones who want it to happen. I mean grown-ups with jobs and lives. So survival guides were coming onto the shelves in American bookstores, how to survive. And I thought, what about zombies? That's what I'm afraid of. So I went looking for that book to read it. And nobody had written it. And I thought, I'll just write it for me. So when I was done trying to be a real writer during the day, at night, I would put all that away and I would get out my little my notes, and I would start writing a book just for me about how to survive a zombie plague.
Comment est-ce que vous l'avez conçu? Petit à petit, à chaque fois que vous aviez une idée, vous disiez ah, comment est-ce que je pourrais survivre dans telle situation? Parce qu'il y a plein d'idées géniales et complètement folles.
Well, they may seem incredible, but they're all based on common sense. You know, in movies, in fiction, in writing a fictional story, you have to create drama that is not necessarily realistic, because a lot of times, real is boring. So therefore, you have to have exciting situations. I didn't think anybody would read this book, so I got away from all that. I don't care about excitement and entertainment. I was trying to write a real guide. So, for example, and I know this is a very American question, when we talk about guns, I thought, I don't want the big guns that Rambo would use. I want guns that are practical and that wouldn't break and that wouldn't jam. I would think about food. I would think about hygiene. You know, I'm a student of history before I'm anything. And when you study history, particularly the history of war, you study how many casualties happen because of disease and because of bad nutrition and because of accidents, as opposed to people who are actually killed by the enemy. And I thought if there was a zombie plague, for every one person who would be killed by a zombie, there would be 10, 50, 100 who would simply die because they didn't dispose of their poo-poo and because of the diseases that would come about because of that. And so I thought I was just trying to answer my own logical, practical, rational questions. And that was it. That was all I was trying to do.
Est-ce que c'est le même processus pour World War Z? Puisque effectivement, on suit des survivants. Comment est-ce que vous l'avez imaginé? Qu'est-ce qui vous a donné envie de l'écrire?
Okay, I wanted to write another zombie book, but I didn't want to do just another zombie adventure story, because everybody does that. Most zombie stories, as I'm sure you've seen, are about an individual or a small group of people and their adventures through a zombie world, and that's fine. I don't dislike that. I like that a lot. But I thought everybody else was doing it, and I think doing it better than I would do. But it left me with questions. Once again, I had questions that nobody was answering. Because to me, zombies are big. They're global. So a story about a small group doesn't answer the big questions that I have. What would my government do? What would your government do? How would the economy function? How would you feed 100 million refugees when all the trade that binds our planet together is suddenly severed? I wanted to answer those questions, and I thought I wanted to make it global also specifically because I'm an American and we are what's called an isolationist people. And I know sometimes we get criticized, you call us imperialists. God help you if we were. We're not. We're isolationists. That's our problem. We get involved in countries that we don't really know anything about. And because we only care about us. And that's because we are a very big country with a lot of space and a lot of resources and not a lot of neighbors. There's Mexico and Canada. And that's it. And so therefore we look inward. And I wanted us in this book to look outward. And because I truly believe there are no more local problems in the world we live in now. I believe what affects one of us affects all of us. We are just too enmeshed. And something happens in a country and it ripples through the world. And so that's why I specifically wanted to make it a global book.
Et racontez-nous vos zombies à vous, parce que souvent quand on touche à des figures comme ça du fantastique, il y a déjà des films, il y a déjà des livres, il y a déjà des bandes dessinées. Comment est-ce que vous les avez imaginés et construits? Est-ce que vous avez voulu faire différent ou au contraire relativement classique?
My zombies are closer to George Romero's zombies, I think, than a lot of others, but different in that, see, George, and I can call him George because I know him, we're friends, and he's very tall, and when you put us together we look like Frodo and Gandalf. George is a great storyteller, and therefore he wants his zombies to get smarter and more sympathetic with each story to make the humans look less sympathetic, which I think is a great device. But I'm a little different. I want my zombies to have no humanity, because that's what scares me. What scares me is something that can kill me that I can't talk to and negotiate with. I can't negotiate with a hurricane. I can't negotiate with Ebola. And being Jewish, I can't negotiate with the Nazis. So the notion of fight or die was very, very important to me. That's why I made them so stupid. I also wanted to make them slow because I wanted to make people underestimate them. You know, a fast zombie is like an airborne virus. It's, you have to be very, oh my God, here they come, here they come. A slow zombie, I wanted to make like the AIDS virus, which is very, very hard to get. And therefore, we contract it or we get zombified because of our ignorance and stupidity and bad decisions. And I wanted that to be very clear. That, for example, I've said this before, about an hour ago, there's no reason AIDS should have become the massive pandemic that it was. There's no reason. It's because we let it happen. And therefore, my zombies should never become a global threat. We let it happen. It's our fault. And that's what's so important to me.
Une petite question sur la construction avec toutes ces interviews. Comment est-ce que vous avez travaillé?
I wanted to make this what's called an oral history. And there are real oral histories. There are real books written where people interview survivors, and that is where you get your history. And there was a wonderful book called The Good War by Studs Terkel, where he actually interviewed survivors of the Second World War from all around the world and all different places, soldiers, politicians, economists, refugees, prisoners of war. And I thought that's the best way to do it. That's the best way to tell this big story, is to interview people from all around the world. And I still get criticized, you know. I mean, that's because I wanted to, because that's the best way to bring in different cultures. Like, look, see, there's a young couple making out right over there. That's so French. God bless you. That's, look at you two. You must really love him. I'm clearly you're not married. You know, that's, oh, no, it's cute. Look, don't, they're young and they're in love, and she looks at him and she thinks everything he does is cool. Wait till they have children. Don't ruin it for them. Yes, going on, moving on. I'm sorry. No, you keep kissing. I'm sorry. Go on.
On regarde plus. C'est intime. On est entre nous. Les zombies, vous avez donc écrit deux livres sur les zombies. Un sujet important pour vous. Est-ce que c'est aussi pour apprivoiser une forme de peur?
I think it's a way of dealing with fear, yes. I mean, I like to write about the things that terrify me, which is why most of the time I don't go in for zombie comedies, except for Shaun of the Dead, which I thought was one of the best zombie movies, best movies of the last 30 years, because it was also scary. But movies that just make zombies cute, you know, and funny, I don't go in for. And there's one movie that recently came out where they fall in love with a zombie, a girl and a zombie, and they fall in love. I don't get it. I'm sorry. That's like falling in love with rectal cancer. I just... Moving on.
Simplement, comment est-ce que vous expliquez le succès des zombies?
Oh, I think zombies are successful because for the same reason they were successful in the 1970s. See, before you two were born, in the 1970s, people felt the system was breaking down. People felt like everything was falling apart and they were scared. And I think psychologically, we want to examine what is the end of all that. What does the apocalypse look like? But at the same time, if it's too real, psychologically, we also want to turn away. So we make it fake. We make the catalyst, the reason for the apocalypse, fake. So that way we can look at the apocalypse, but still tell ourselves, that's not going to happen, and we can go back to sleep. And that's why zombies are popular, because it's what you see in a good zombie story is the same stuff you would see during a riot or a plague or a Hurricane Katrina. It's the same stuff. But because the reason for it is fake, we have a psychological defense. It's called in psychology the ego defense mechanism. Did you guys ever hear of a book or see the movie The Road by Cormac McCarthy? Yeah, who read it? Who should just, yeah, I haven't. Because that's too real. I'm a father. I have a little boy. That's way too real for me. Now, if Cormac McCarthy came out with a new version of The Road and put a little sentence in the beginning that said, the book you're about to read all happened because of a zombie plague. Oh, I'd read it in a heartbeat. No problem. And I think that's why zombies are popular. We get to explore the apocalypse, but we get to do it in a safe way.
Ces derniers temps, on a vu pas mal de livres de zombies et même de chercheurs qui travaillent sur les zombies, qui font des métaphores sur le zombie, l'humanité, la fin de l'humanité, notre peur. Comment est-ce que vous regardez tout ça? Est-ce qu'on le prend trop au sérieux parfois?
No. I think actually what's great about zombies being popular is now you're getting very intelligent, serious people who are using their intelligence and their skills to educate, but they're educating through the zombie metaphor, which you didn't have before. Because 10 years ago, if you said zombies to most people, they would go, oh, more brains. And that was it. Now you have very smart people in America. We have a professor of international relations who wrote a whole book on how to get his students interested in talking about other countries through the zombie metaphor. You had another scientist, psychiatrist from Harvard University, write about the zombie brain, but you learn about the brain. In my country, we have something called the Center for Disease Control, and it is the government organization that is tasked with preparing the population for a pandemic. Now, all my life, my government has been trying to educate the population about things. But most people, it's boring, or it's too scary, and they don't want that. But the Center for Disease Control came up with a zombie plan, which is wonderful, because now you have young Americans talking about things like bottled water and a first aid kit and a radio and a plan. Where to go? What to do? How do you get your loved ones together? And they're doing it all because they think it's a zombie plan, but if there was a real disaster, they would be ready. And so I think that is a wonderful, positive outgrowth of the zombie trend.
Parlez-nous de la carte blanche. Vous avez eu carte blanche aux Utopiales pour présenter trois films. Parlez-nous un petit peu de ces trois films. Pourquoi vous les avez choisis et qu'est-ce qui vous plaît dans chacun d'eux? Il y en a un qu'on a vu hier soir.
I chose two movies last night. Who was there for them? Who saw them last night? All right. One person who's a little ashamed of it. He only raises his hand. That's okay. I chose two movies last night. One was Shaun of the Dead, which I thought was an amazing movie of social commentary on that generation of English people. Because I don't, you know, in England, they went through several generations of first they were imperial, and then they were the hippies, and, you know, then they were the punks, and then became the slacker generation, a generation of just malaise. What do we do now? And Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright perfectly encapsulated that in a movie. It's like their version of my movie, Clerks, not mine, but Kevin Smith's, but my country's version, Clerks. Then, because I think that movie defined a generation. And Dawn of the Dead really defined a generation of Americans before me. They were called the baby boomers. And they started with all these wonderful high ideals that they were going to change the world. And then they just thought they were going to buy and sell the world. And no generation has betrayed its values worse than that one. And that's George Romero's generation. He put it right in that movie, which was brilliant. And the one I think we're going to see tonight is Red Planet, which I think is very important because it talks about the notion of utopia. See, in the 1950s, before there was the notion of environmentalism and ecology and fixing the problem, there just was this feeling, I think it was in Europe too, and in America, that we were just going to spoil the planet and ruin it, and then we were just going to move to another planet. Then in the 1960s and 70s, we started to think, well, maybe we should fix the planet here before we start thinking about another planet. Red Planet, the movie Red Planet, is great because it goes back to that 1950s attitude of, we can't fix the planet, we're just going to move somewhere else. And I think that's a very powerful theme. And that's why we're going to see it tonight.
Donc, ces trois films-là sont vos préférés? Il y en a d'autres?
Yeah, of course, I have favorite movies, but this is Nans Utopiales. I mean, we got to be in tune. I'm not going to show Das Boot, you know. That doesn't, or The Last Emperor. I have many favorite, you know, silent movie. You know, if I wanted to show favorite movies, we'd have a Mel Brooks Film Festival. No, we're showing films that are in tune with what we're doing here today.
D'autres films de zombies qui vous plairaient et que vous auriez pas pu mettre dans cette sélection?
Oh, yeah. I like zombie movies from all around the world. I think it's fascinating to see how other countries look at the zombies. There's a great one called Wild Zero, and it's Japanese. Wow. I don't know if it has great social commentary, but what it does have is aliens trying to take over the world by rising the zombies, and so a young Japanese hipster and his transvestite boyfriend-girlfriend have to enlist the help of a Japanese rockabilly band named Guitar Wolf. And that's how they save the world. Wow. So I would have loved to have shown that, but I don't think it was in tune with the serious intellectual discussions of what we're talking about today.
Évidemment, on va rester dans l'intellectuel très sérieux. Vous êtes considéré presque comme un spécialiste des zombies. Est-ce que c'est étonnant pour vous? Surprenant? Embêtant?
I'm surprised I have a job. You know, you have to understand, I grew up feeling like an outsider, feeling like nobody in the world understood me. And so I'm always surprised when anybody understands my writing and enjoys it. Because there's also people who enjoy it for the wrong reasons. When Zombie Survival Guide came out, they put it in the humor section. I didn't think it was funny. Of course. I mean, I think anybody who is not a complete egotist is shocked by their own success. I mean, I'm sure you've had writers up here who have said, like, yes, I am successful. Yeah, it's about time. You know? No, I don't know. Can we take some of their questions? Do you guys have any questions?
Oui, bien sûr. On a encore une vingtaine de minutes. On peut attaquer tout de suite les questions. J'en ai d'autres.
Yeah,
Monsieur devant. Hop.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Donc, merci. Vous êtes renouvelé, je vous rassure. C'est un plaisir de vous réécouter. Vous communiquez la pêche. En tout cas, ça marche sur moi. Vous avez la pêche et vous pouvez communiquer. Donc, ça fait plaisir. Merci beaucoup. La question que je me posais par rapport au guide de survie et à World War Z, je me demandais si en fait on ne pouvait pas voir une sorte de reflet l'un dans l'autre de World War Z dans le guide de survie et vice-versa, dans la mesure où la construction de World War Z, c'est justement des témoignages de gens qui ont survécu et qui ont été obligés de survivre, pas forcément avec les méthodes que vous donnez dans le guide, mais qui ont été obligés d'affronter l'apocalypse zombie et qui ont survécu, qui ont affronté le phénomène à leur manière, soit de façon économique, soit de façon sociale. Mais voilà, est-ce que quelque part, World War Z ne serait pas une application plus ou moins effective du guide?
No, that's a really good point, because there's a central theme to all of my work, which is that we all have within us the potential to be heroic. You know, I'm not saying that I'll never write a story about a hero, but for the most part, I don't believe in heroes, because I don't believe that great deeds are done by heroes. I believe they're done by all of us being heroic. You know, my father was in the Second World War. He's not a hero. He was just a 19-year-old kid who was asked to do a job, and he was scared, and he was cold, and he didn't want to do it, but he did it anyway. And I think that's the study of the human race, the study of the triumph of humanity, is that all of us have within us the ability to be heroes. And there's nothing particularly macho or cool about it. And so I think my stories try to tell us that we can all do that. And we don't need, you know, some really cool guy with a big gun. And, you know, that's fantasy.
Une question là-bas?
I'm just going to say this in English, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if you had a zombie escape plan and what that was.
Yeah, I do. It's my earthquake escape plan. I'm living in, you know, where are you from?
Canada, but we live in Brest right now.
Where in Canada?
Central Edmonton.
All right, so you live in the plains.
Yeah.
With the oil fields, all right. Well, but I live in L.A. You guys know Los Angeles? Okay. In Los Angeles, we live on the edge of the apocalypse all the time. We have earthquakes. We have floods, we have fires. Every now and then the Los Angeles Police Department pulls over a black guy and beats him within an inch of his life and starts a riot and then disappears. You know, during the Los Angeles riots of the 1990s with the Rodney King, the LAPD vanished and they left everyone else to defend themselves. And you see pictures of just like Korean store owners on top of their stores. So in Los Angeles, we always know how to survive. So, yeah, that's my plan. Anyone? Yes.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Il y a une question que je me pose, c'est-à-dire quelle serait la meilleure plan possible au niveau des bâtiments? Parce que je sais qu'on en discute avec des amis après avoir vu Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Mais y en a un qui dit ça va être un centre commercial. Moi, je vais dire non, ça va être un bunker. Puis... Donc, à votre
no,
avis...
Not a bunker. You get into a bunker and you're just digging a grave. How are you going to get out? No, what you need to do is you need to find a place. It's not so much about the building itself. It's like in America, in real estate, we say there are three rules of finding a home in real estate. Location, location, and location. So you need to go someplace that other people wouldn't want to go, because you wouldn't have to... The zombies are at least your problem. The biggest problem is the refugees. They're going to be hungry, and they're a lot smarter than the zombies, and they'll stab you in the back with a sharpened toothbrush for a can of beans. So you want to go someplace far, where nobody would want to go, and that would be your plan. So and you may have to leave France, because everybody wants to come here, you know. And you and when I say go somewhere where people don't want to go, don't make a joke about Belgium. I mean a real place where nobody wants to go, you know, like a desert or a swamp or the Arctic. You guys heard of Svalbard? That's where you need to go, or Greenland. But then you need to survive every minute of the day. So I hope that answers your question. Anyone else? This gentleman here. The gentleman here from Welcome Back, Cotter, with the big hair. That was an American show, by the way. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, you go.
Je voulais avoir quelques mots de l'auteur du livre sur l'adaptation cinéma qui a eu très récemment.
I thought that it had an amazing title. I've been asked this since I got here, and I've said this all the time. Look, I wasn't involved in the movie. I didn't write the script. I actually didn't even know what it was until I showed up to see it. Wow. But the truth is, when you write a book, you can do whatever you want. I'm obligated to no one. So I can write a book of interviews of people all around the world. That in a movie, that's just weird. And I'm sure they felt like, well, we need to make a hit movie. So the rules have changed. In my book, it's a deep, global, socio-political study of the human race under conditions of deep existential threat. In the movie, it's Brad Pitt making pancakes. And I think they accomplished their goal. And, you know, good for them. That has nothing to do with me. You know, I wouldn't even know how to write a hit movie. All I know how to do is write books that I like. So that answers your question, I hope, you know, about that movie.
Monsieur. Bonjour. Est-ce que vous avez lu la série de comics Les Walking Dead? Et si oui, qu'est-ce que vous en pensez? Walking Dead.
I think Walking Dead is great. It's exactly what we talked about sort of small group adventure story, which I think is great. It's a great study of small group dynamics, which is what all good zombie movies do, or good zombie stories, which I think is great. The TV show, I've only seen the first season because they fired the auteur, Frank Darabont. Do you guys know this? You should all know this. The man who created the TV show, the man who should have a statue in Washington, D.C., was fired by AMC after the first season. I don't know why. I don't know what he could have done. I think it was just an assassination. If it was up to me, here, you know what? Here's what I would do. I would have a statue of Frank Darabont in Washington, D.C. next to Martin Luther King for what he has done. There would be Dr. Martin Luther King, and then there would be Frank. That's what I would do for Frank.
Allez-y. Alors, je vais un peu changer de registre. J'ai toujours été un grand fan des films de votre père. Outre l'influence au niveau social, est-ce que son humour et sa façon de présenter ses propres films vous a influencé? Et à quel point?
What's the name of the author?
Mel Brooks.
Oh, you want me to talk about my dad?
Yes, exactly.
Did I? No, I've never seen him. No, of course I saw my dad's movies. I grew up on my dad's movies. I was much more influenced by Mel Brooks, the World War II soldier, than Mel Brooks, the comedian. Do you know how to survive if you're in the cold and not lose your toes to frostbite? I'll give you a lesson from Mel Brooks. Here's what he did when he was fighting in France and Germany in the winter of 1944. Take off your boots. Don't sleep with your boots on. It cuts off circulation. And then take off your socks and rub your feet for 20 minutes. And then rub, he had bacon fat from his rations, and he put it all over his feet. And then put two pairs of socks on, and that's how you sleep. And that saved his toes, because a lot of his friends who slept with their boots on and didn't rub their feet and didn't put grease on their feet lost their toes. You might not also know this, Mel Brooks is an expert marksman. Mel Brooks can hit a target at 100 meters with a rifle. These are the things I learned from my dad. And my mother, too. My mother was in charge of our survival kit, our earthquake survival kit. So, yeah, I was very influenced by my parents, but not from the public persona that you might think. And I understand it. Look, there's a public persona, there's a private persona. And the public persona is cowboys farting around a fire. And that's fine. That did not happen in our house. It was very different. Anyone else?
On a un monsieur derrière, ou juste devant. Oui.
Bonsoir. Je voulais savoir si vous aviez lu Je suis une légende, donc le livre. Et,
By Richard Matheson? Yeah.
Si oui, ce que vous en avez pensé?
Oh my God, do you guys all read I Am Legend by Richard Matheson? It was amazing. It was the template for Night of the Living Dead. George Romero freely admits he took it. And Night of the Living Dead. No, look, I love that stuff. And because I also love vampires as well. Not Twilight. I don't like to slam other people, but I will freely slam Twilight. Not because it's silly and stupid, because of the message it gives to young women. I think that movie has done more damage, I think, to feminism in my country and women's rights than anything. So much so, my new comic book is a vampire story, but it's very different. For example, everybody in my country loves vampires. They love looking at them because they're sleek and sexy and cool. You know what I think when I see vampires? Get a job. Because to me, vampires represent the aristocracy. And they also represent a growing trend, at least in my country, of not having to work. And not having, more importantly, not having to fail. And this is very important. I don't know how it is here, but in my country, there's a growing trend among young people who are terrified of failure. And have never failed. They've never risked. And I say to them, no, failure is what makes you strong. It builds your survival mechanism. And that's what I tried to write in this new comic book, Extinction Parade, is you have this group, the aristocracy, the vampires. They are at the top of the biological food chain. They've never struggled. They've never felt fear. They've never failed. And so therefore, when the zombies rise and start to eat their one food source out from under them, how do they adapt? Can they adapt? Can they survive? Can they organize? Can they do all the things that we, as the weaker humans, have been doing since the dawn of our evolution? I wanted to tackle that notion of what makes us strong is compensating for our former weaknesses. Because I do believe that strength comes from adapting to weakness. And if you start out strong, if you have everything given to you, for example, the vampires have bad parents, Mother Nature and Father Time, who spoiled them. And therefore, they never learn to adapt. And they never learn to struggle. So that's what I'm working on now.
Bonjour. J'aurais voulu avoir votre avis sur ce que la mode des zombies et le succès aujourd'hui nous apprendrait sur notre société. À une époque, on envisageait de se déplacer dans l'espace pour trouver des challenges. Aujourd'hui, on rêve un peu de quelque chose de même plus surnaturel, mais de moins qu'humain, de plus bête, de plus lent que nous, qui viendrait directement à nous. On n'a plus besoin de se déplacer. Est-ce que c'est une forme de fainéantise ou est-ce qu'à votre avis, il y a une forme de sociopathie ambiante qui nous fait qu'on attend juste un prétexte pour caler une balle dans la tête à notre voisin?
No. I like I said, I think that it is a response to the very scary times that we are all living in. We are being bombarded with global catastrophes, one after the other. And we are being taught how truly global it is. For example, in Fukushima in Japan, you know that all... everything is taken from real life. If you haven't read World War Z, I have something called The Redeker Plan, and it's a South African story of how to survive. That was based on a real documentary I saw about South Africa in the 1980s, where children, 13 years old, were being taught to shoot white children because they were all ready for the great race war that was going to happen. So no, nothing in any of my work is just made up. Everything I try to root deeply in history, because I think there's nothing that imaginary monsters can do to us that is even remotely scary when compared to what we do to each other and what we have done to each other in real life.
Bonjour. Vous avez fait une analogie tout à l'heure en comparant les zombies à des phénomènes, des catastrophes naturelles. Est-ce que ce qui n'est pas plus effrayant dans un zombie, c'est le fait que je vais peut-être avoir à tuer mes parents, un ami, quelqu'un que je connais? Parce qu'une catastrophe naturelle, elle ne ressemble pas à ma mère, même si, bon, voilà. Et donc, voilà, c'est la ressemblance, moi, je trouve, qui m'effraie le plus. Est-ce que ce serait pas ça qui serait vraiment le plus effrayant dans un...
Well, that's a very small, very personal thing, which I think is great, and it is very scary to think about killing a loved one. To me, I think it's infinitely more scary of cutting the food supply to a major city, and what that would cause. You know, I've been asked if 9/11 was the inspiration for World War Z. No. I mean, if anything, Hurricane Katrina was much worse, I think, than 9/11. Because the thing is, we live in a very artificial society. We've been doing this since the Stone Age, building upon nature with trade. I mean, all of us here, who's wearing something that was built, that was made within 100 yards or 100 miles or kilometers of this town? The whole world depends on trade. What happens when you cut that? Where does your food come from? Where does your water come from? Just ask the Germans during both World Wars when we cut off their food supply. Or the British, when the Germans tried to do it to them. I think the notion of shattering this web of society, the power grid, the water, most of your country is powered by nuclear reactors. What would happen if there was a meltdown? Just one. You're a very small country. A lot of people would be infected very quickly.
There is a certain novel that... perhaps ties in thematically with certain things, or at least one certain thing you said. I wonder if it might perhaps have been an influence on the zombie survival guide or others who were, obviously have no idea what it is. But could I ask, have you read The Empire of Fear? Or I think it's just called Empire of Fear by Brian Stapleford.
No, I haven't. Is it an English writer?
Yes, it's about an aristocracy of vampires. It's an alternate history. This aristocracy of vampires, basically it's either spads or retrospective history. The context of the book is, hundreds of years. There's this aristocracy of vampires. I think a lot of real historical personages, such as Richard the Lionheart.
Richard the Lionheart was a vampire?
Yeah, I think in the book, possibly Richard Burton, the vampires, they have interests. They have sort of real politics that suits their class interests. Brian Stapleford said alternate history has its own aesthetics, which comes from seeing what remains the same when certain things are different. And it has been said about that book that... it could be seen as sort of latently a worry about AIDS, just as Bram Stoker's Dracula could be seen as a sort of latent worry about the spread of syphilis. Anyway, I just thought I'd mention that it ties in thematically with certain things you've said.
Thank you. I actually have not read it. Yeah. And I don't need to read it. I don't need to read any other vampire fiction. I got everything I needed from Dracula. I mean, he is the aristocrat, because let's face it, Dracula doesn't do his own house taxes. That's Renfield's job. I love the notion of that. But I think what's more important is than historical is the notion of not having to do a day's work and not having to fail and not having to struggle. And that's... I got my inspiration for Extinction Parade not from vampire fiction, but from real life. And that's where I get all my inspiration for. It's from real life, because it's all out there and it's just waiting to be talked about.
Dans le film de George Romero, Zombie... les zombies symbolisent les Américains consommateurs qui hantent le supermarché, le mall. Mais qui sont les quatre rescapés? Qu'est-ce qu'ils symbolisent?
The four survivors, they symbolize the consumers as well. Because for you guys who haven't seen it, It starts with a group of people, and they get a helicopter, and they land on the mall just to get emergency supplies. And they go, oh, yeah, that's it. And then they go, stuff. And they're like Gollum in Lord of the Rings, with my precious. And they just want the stuff, and they get hypnotized. And she says, you're hypnotized by this place. It's so bright and neatly wrapped, you don't see it's a prison. They are baby boomers. They are exactly that generation, which completely surrendered to materialism.
Monsieur.
Bonjour. Dans le bouquin, il y a un passage sur les derniers, enfin l'effet dernier homme sur terre en fait, où des gens sont retranchés
yes.
dans des endroits et ils refusent l'aide parce qu'ils se considèrent comme les maîtres du monde à leur endroit. Alors c'est drôle parce que dans le livre en fait, c'est clairement des antagonistes. Alors qu'en général, dans les bouquins de zombies ou de post-apocalyptiques, ce sont des héros. Vous avez voulu prendre à contre-pied complètement cette...
Yes. I did want to go against that idea because I'm not a fan of the survivalist culture that is in my country. There's a very, very small percentage of Americans who want society to collapse because they don't fit in with society. They feel like outcasts. They feel like losers. So therefore, they want society to completely fall apart so then they can be the king and then they can be, you know, the master. And those people are the last man on earth, and they want that. And I think that's very, very dangerous. I don't want that to be a national dialogue. Because the truth is, in my country, we have a very small percentage of people calling for less government. What they don't understand is they're calling for a failed state. They're calling for Somalia. So I'm not a fan of that. I don't see, when I see zombie movies or apocalyptic movies, and I see that one guy, you know, with his motorcycle and his gun or whatever, and I don't want to be that guy, and I don't want that guy. I want us all working together to prevent society from collapsing. So that's where I stand on it.
On a le temps pour une dernière question. Là-bas, le micro est déjà en place.
Bonjour.
Hello.
Si vous vous êtes attaqué par une attaque de zombies, pour vous, quelle serait la meilleure arme pour lutter contre les cannibales?
Okay, finally. All right. I think the weapon depends on where you live, because the weapon should also be a tool. I'm not a fan of guns, not for political reasons, but guns need bullets. You know, I'm sorry. And especially handguns. I mean, in a lot of zombie movies, you have a guy with a big pistol. Do you know how hard it is to hit a target with a pistol, especially a big one? I'm American, so I'm, you know, we all know about firearms. It's really, really hard. If this were a real zombie movie, the guy would be shooting and he'd keep missing. So no, you want a hand-to-hand weapon. But the truth is, and this is what they teach you in martial arts training, I studied a little bit of Okinawan karate, Shotokan, and the first thing they taught us is don't get in a fight. That's the best way to survive. Don't engage. In our military, we have a term called escape and evade. And that's the best way to fight a zombie is not to fight one. If you only fight a zombie if it's absolutely necessary. You know, otherwise, you're upping your chances of getting killed. So the best way is to escape and evade. Look, from a biological metaphoric standpoint, the inheritors of the post-zombie world is not going to be the lion. It's going to be the cockroach. Because the cockroach knows when to get out of the way. So that's my message. I don't go in for machismo. I go in for survival. And that's very important.
Il nous reste à remercier Max Brooks. Merci à vous. Retrouvez-le en dédicace et d'autres conférences.
Thank you. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Before you all go, I wanted to tell you just about one more graphic novel I have out coming out in April, which is important because it takes place in France. It's a true story. It's World War I. And it's about a group of American soldiers, because they had black skin, were set up to fail by their own government. So they came here to France to fight with the French army, and they became one of the most decorated units in the entire American army. And their story is very unknown. It's coming out in April, at least in English. I don't have a French publisher yet, called The Harlem Hellfighters. So if you read English, check it out. I think it's a very important story of the First World War that needs to be told. Thank you very much. Thank you for indulging me.